because these things are made for men. Oh, I'm on. Great. I'll not go into my usual rant about this. Patriarchal mics everywhere. Anyway, so I'm doing this from notes, and I had in my mind as I was preparing and preparing and preparing and preparing that I saw in my mind Janie Spar, our sister, who is a victim of domestic violence in the house of the church. I saw her in my mind as a few weeks ago she walked up and down in Central Church and she had a Bible in her hand. She had the Bible in her hand that was the Bible as it so happened. She just grabbed one. She was staying in my house, and of the many Bibles that she could have grabbed, she grabbed the Bible that was presented to my husband in 1943. Third Reformed Church in Holland, Michigan, to David Boss from Third Reformed Church in Holland, Michigan. It was a King James translation, and she wanted that because she wanted to read the translation that said that God formed Jeremiah in the belly. She wanted that word belly. And there was Janie, herself a victim of our domestic violence, enjoining us to love. That it's our turn. It's our turn to love. And I thought, well, I'm not going to stand there looming over you all this morning. I'm just going to be here like the teacher that I am and walk up and down like I do in class and talk to you about this text. And then I see in my mind Chris last week, who stood in front of us just like this and talked and talked and talked about how stupid we are and about that that's the people God is working with and the people that she loves. And I was so moved by these visions in my mind. And then there was Dr. Jennings, who spoke to us about the fact that we need to ask questions. We need to ask questions about the spaces that we are in. And if our houses, our homes are not a space that we are in, then I don't know what is. So it's about Ezra. And Ezra, I'm sort of assuming that's not a popular that you hear a lot of sermons from. Ezra's not a popular guy, kind of. And then to make it a little stranger, it's all about Cyrus in the beginning, right? And the dating is to Cyrus, which is weird in the Bible, because when books are dated, they are dated to the kings of Israel or Judah, not a foreign ruler in Persia. But that's what happens. And then to make it even weirder, Cyrus is really a good guy, and he's not an Israelite. He's in Isaiah called God's chosen Messiah. Can you believe it? And he is benevolent. He is a good guy. And what's more, there's nothing bad ever said about Cyrus in the Bible, ever. I couldn't think of a word of bad that's said about him. It's all good. And what's more, he's a real guy. Well, now that might not strike you as so odd, but think about it. Okay, the ancestors of Israel, were they real? Well, probably not. Okay, the Exodus, was that real? Well, maybe a few stragglers went out of Egypt, right? The conquest, the so-called conquest, was that real? Well, we hope not. The monarchy, even that's being called into question. So thank God, here we are with Cyrus, a real guy who really, phew, what a relief. So really, he did do these things that they say in Ezra 1. He issued edicts that people actually could go home to their own places. A real guy, a good guy. But he's a guy with a problem because he has people in his place that he really doesn't want there. They're crowding the place, many of them, and they're weird, they're different, they do different things, they have different customs, they have different clothes, they eat different foods, and they have this strange way of worshiping. And so there are too many places in his kingdom that are going to rot and ruin, so why not send these people to one of these places where they come from in the first place, and then they can kind of rebuild it and make it habitable, make it a home. Time to send them home. They got a raw deal a ways back. So all of you go. All of you go already. Go home. Not so eager to go home, maybe? Maybe you made a home for yourselves here in this strange place. Okay, I'll sweeten the pot. So he gives them stuff. He gives them silver and gold, all the stuff that they stole from the temple to begin with. So you see all these people laden down with all their pots and pans and cups and all the stuff that they got. I don't know how they carried it. I'm not sure he provided transportation on top of it all, but so there they go. Cyrus, the good guy, the real guy who has a problem. He's, of course, a good guy in this description, but what is he really? He is really a military ruler who ruled by military conquest, who lays down the laws, right? He makes the rule. He's the emperor. He rules a whole empire. And in that kind of an empire, like in our empire, it's not very likely that the rules and taxations do not come down very hard on the poor and the widow and the stranger. So benevolent or not, that empire was not as benevolent as we think it might be or as it sounds in Ezra 1, or it was not really a place where you could make that much of a home for yourself. So go home and read all of Ezra and Nehemiah. It won't take you that long. It's well worth reading, and read about what the people were experiencing once they did go home in Judah. So what are these people going home to? What are they going to? Everything in ruin. There is no home there for them. There are no city walls, there are no houses, and there certainly isn't a house for God in the place that they go to. Violence, in the broad sense of the word, in the sense of the masses of migrants that we see here up on our walls, who by the hundreds of thousands at the moment come limping, come hobbling, come crawling, carrying their loved ones. The Times every day is full of their pictures into Europe. And so what do? We point our fingers at Europe. We say, oh, those people don't know how to handle all of that. No, we do know here how to handle all of that so well. Domestic violence has a broad horizon, so we want today to put it in this broad horizon. Dislocation, disconnection is what it causes, and trauma. Then, as today, many of these victims also now coming into Europe are sent home. They're being sent home daily from Germany by plane to God knows what fate. Cyrus, the good guy, the real guy, the pious guy. Did you notice how he talks about God, the God who was in Jerusalem, and that God has given him all the kingdoms that he rules? It's all a gift from the great God who lives in Jerusalem. He has a plan. So they'll go, like it or not, and make a home, like it or not. Now, the Hebrew word for house that occurs over and over again in this chapter is bayit. And they only have one word for what's a house and what's a home. We have two words, don't we? And we often make the one the other. Realtors don't sell houses. They sell homes, right? People that don't have a house are the homeless, not the houseless. It's a kind of interesting obfuscation, I think, that we do. We talk about, and we focus here today, because October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and we might as well at least once a year pay attention to this in our congregations and in our world. It comes from a Latin word, domus, that means house. And it's a searing contradiction in terms, isn't it? Domestic violence. Domestic is usually a good word. Violence that occurs in the house creates homelessness. It creates a place that is not a home, dislocation, loss of identity, loss of self, and of course, loss of life. You saw it. The quotes that I'm going to use are up there on the wall. They're from an article by Alana Vagianos in 2014 in the Huffington Post. U.S. statistics. Troops killed in the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. Between 2001 and 2012, 6,488. Women murdered by current or ex-male partners, same period, 11,766. Children, I'm only picking a few of the 30 that she lists. Children exposed regularly to domestic violence every 10 million. Number of women who have experienced intimate partner violence in their lifetime, more than 38 million. This is insane. This is unacceptable. This can't be. This cannot keep going on. These are overwhelming statistics, and yet need to face them. We can't be silent in the face of them, because then we go on making the house not home, but a place of homelessness. Cyrus, they're circling back to Cyrus, the benevolent despot, has a plan. And he also sounds like a bit of a fool, doesn't he? Because he keeps talking about the God who lives in Jerusalem. Now, we know that Adonai, the God of Israel, did not live in Jerusalem. Israel knew it, and we know it. We know all that. We only have to remember the prayer by Solomon. When Solomon built the temple, he said, even the heaven or the highest of heaven cannot contain thee, how much less this house that I have built. And Jeremiah, shortly before the people were exiled to Babylon, stood in the walls of the temple and cried, do not trust in the words of this lie. This is the temple of the Holy One. This is the temple of the Holy One. They knew that. They knew, and we know, that Zion, Jerusalem, or bread and wine in themselves do not make the presence of God real. It needs to be made real through us, through the believing community. There is a home for God where we make a home for the vulnerable, for the weak, the suffering, the marginalized, the silenced ones. Nancy Ramsey and John McClure, who wrote a book called Telling the Truth, edited a book, wrote the following. In most sanctuaries, during the time of worship, there are, quote, batterers, child abusers, and many victims of sexual and domestic violence. They are present there. They also point out that the usual course for most congregations is silence, and that it is crucial that pastors and others break the silence. So I beg of you, all of you who are leaders, going to be leaders in your congregations, in your circles of believers, to devote time, attention, a listening ear, and a speaking voice to this huge issue among us. It's easy to point fingers. It's easy to point fingers at Cyrus, who was so oppressive and naive, a naive ruler who thought that God lived in Jerusalem, at those from Judah who thought they could build a house for God. But that's not why we're here. That's not why we're talking about this text. Why we listen to the text. We encounter the text, don't we? We want to encounter God in the text. We need to look to our own houses. Listen to the silenced voices in our midst. Look to our collusion with empire and lift the veil from the reality of violence. Dear sisters and brothers in Christ, We need to hear and speak the silenced voices of the ones who suffer violence and speak the truth about our participation in it. Everywhere a woman is abused by her partner, everywhere she is isolated, everywhere her voice is taken away, everywhere her gifts and talents go unrecognized, her full participation in church life is made unwelcome, everywhere that we hang on to speaking of God only in terms of male power and male sovereignty, imagining the divine as male and thus the male as divine, we quench the life in her, in God, and collude in violence by our silence. We need a dose of longing for a real home. The home God had in mind when she created the world. When the people of Israel came into being, when the church was created, wherever a gathering exists of the beloved community. For the Most Holy had in mind a true home and is always ready to begin again with human beings who stumble and hobble and limp and crawl their way toward home. There's hope. There's hope even for us speaking and seeing and witnessing and unveiling the truth as we have tried to do today.